let's talk about whose job it is to sell comics.
Ooh, okay. That guy over there. You, slacker, pick that fucking comic up.
There we go. Thanks a lot. Good afternoon, everybody. Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internet is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Hang on a second. Nope. Okay, never mind. I didn't win any Powerball in the last couple of weeks, so I guess I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I thought I'd be able to just say, goodbye, I'm out of here. No podcast for me.
Stop the clock.
Oh, okay, hang on, I gotta get the battery out.
Are you saying that if you hit the lottery, you're quitting?
I would be out of here so fast, it would look like one of those Looney Tunes. Fwink! Right through the walls.
I thought that you would basically pour a bunch of money into this podcast so that it would be beloved as the national treasure that it is.
A Nicolas Cage movie? No. I might contemplate opening up another comic book shop, hiring you, Big Mike, Little Mike, Gruber, pay you a decent salary with full benefits, and allowing you to have a podcast studio in the shop. But it doesn't mean I'm going to hang around for it. I figure I'll go south in the winter, north in the summer, and or better yet, I will be your remote podcast man as I go, hey, guess what I just bought at this comic store here? Travel the U.S. and the world looking for comics. I got a dream, but nope. Sadly, I didn't win the Powerball, so I'm all yours. What do you want to talk about this week?
Well, first off, it makes me think that every time you buy a Powerball ticket, I need to line up a co-host.
Well, it's you know, you may have to, because not only are we still running the co-host with Corey while I go get my hip taken care of in Hip Watch 2, Electric Boogaloo, and Corey, tell the fine folks what they have to do if they want to co-host this here podcast while I am recuperating on my recliner.
Well, believe it or not, I actually have a pre-record that I could drop in right here. As Joe preps for Hip Watch 2 Electric Boogaloo, I am looking for co-hosts through the month of December. Now, the other thing that we did last year that I really enjoyed, because December can be a very busy month, is we recorded most of our fill-in episodes in October and November. So, if you would like to be a co-host on Crazy Comics and Stories in the month of December, you can! Believe it or not, kids, I am letting other people co-host. If you have a topic, go ahead and let me know. If you have experience with other podcasts, go ahead and let me know. But you can be a co-host. How, you may ask, and you darn well should. You can email me at solitarerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject co-host. If you don't have an idea for a episode topic, that's okay. Joe usually doesn't have an idea anyway. I have tons of ideas. And if I know a little about you and what you like to collect, we can do a focused episode like I did with Dangerous Dan Moore when we talked about his favorite character, Thanos. Or when I co-hosted with Adam Vermillion and we talked about his favorite character, Daredevil. So go ahead and email me. I'm looking for co-hosts and I'd like you to be one of them.
Very cool.
Yeah, professional now, up in this organization.
Well, and also there is another one coming up that you may want to, and it's just in a couple of weeks, line up a co-host, see if they want to talk with you.
Well, why? Because
on the end of September. No, no, this isn't actually slacking. At the end of September, from the 26th to the 29th, in our sweet spot window where we normally record the podcast, my dad has talked me into going on a retreat. So I will be somewhere in the state. Yeah, and it's where you check your cell phone and your computers and you just go out and whatever. It's probably religious orientated, knowing him, but I really don't know if I really want to go. But I figure, you know, he's done so much for me. He's getting up there in age. This may be the last thing I get to do with him before he, you know, passes away or just gets to the point where he just can't do anything. We had a cookout a couple weeks ago and, you know, he's like, oh, let me go get some wood. And he takes about three swings of the axe and he's like, oh, I'm winded. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, come on. You know, it's like his doctor told him, John, you're 81 and you're acting like you're 51. So you just, you know, body doesn't do things that you can, you did years ago. So you got to figure, I figure I'd give you warning and that way you can either fill in or get a host. I'm sure Reginald's been beating. Did you get emails from that guy? I
get emails from him every day.
I got it. Yeah, I just had to block him. Talk to Corey. Talk to Corey. So anyways, I just figured I'd give you advance warning so that weekend you can.
I told Reginald if he wants to do a podcast, he could do one on raccoons.
Oh, that could be eminently annoying, but, you know.
Oh, don't worry. I'll just throw them away. But still.
Yeah. There are some things even the Solitaire Rose Network won't put on their podcast network.
I have to protect. I have to protect our beloved listeners.
So you've been warned. I'm going to bail on you once again. I'm really getting into this bailing on you. I figure you're the Alan Alda of the show where, you know, he appeared on every episode of MASH and then other people didn't. So it's all good.
And it's named after you.
I know. That's the best part. But, you know, you are the national treasure.
I suppose.
I don't even have any news, really.
You know, I've been reading the fire-breathing Twitter machine.
Oh, what's going on in that?
Somebody out on the Twitter machine started a conversation, and a whole bunch of comic creators joined in.
Oh, fun. What was
oddly, when I tell you what they were talking about, it was only comic creators.
Mm-hmm.
No publishers, no. It was a younger creator talking about how much work he's having to put into getting the word out about his comic. And he works for Marvel. And he said,
you know, is this a named creator? What books are you working on?
I don't have the name.
Oh. It's going to be interesting to know the book, you know, because.
All I heard was it was his first comic.
Okay.
I read back in the thread, and the thread goes on for page after page after page after page after page. And, you know, a lot of it is creators that I follow, talking to creators I don't follow, and branching off. And you know how – no, you don't know. You don't have a fire-breathing Twitter machine, do you?
I do, but I couldn't even tell you what it is. I'd have to go figure out.
Well, what it is, he's a new creator, kind of his first book at Marvel, and he said, you know, Marvel's been nice to him, but they're not doing much publicity other than the stuff in the Marvel Preview magazine. And he was asking, is it my job to get the word out, to set up podcast interviews, to do publicity, et cetera, et cetera? And a lot of comic creators, older ones, younger ones, ones with big names, ones who, you know, don't have a big name, ones who work for smaller publishers, etc. They all chimed in with much different experiences. And especially, you know, you have Peter David, who he started in the publicity department. Fabian Nyasasia started in Marvel's publicity department. They had a much different take on things than, say, Colleen Duran, who has spent most of her time working on her creator own stuff. So
summarize a few.
The older creators talked about how it's the company's job to get the publicity out And if somebody asks you for an interview, you could give an interview. If a convention reaches out to you, you know, especially at DC, some of the people who are on what they call on staff, you know, who have exclusive contracts, say most of the convention and podcast appearances and things like that go through either their agent or DC. Mike Carlin's the guy. He has an agent, and his agent sets up all of his interviews and things like that. And the people who worked, I would say, in comics in the last 10, 15 years were all, nope, it's your job. You got to hustle. You got to get out there. You got to get the word out. You email podcasters. You email conventions. You send out press releases. You push it on your social media, et cetera, et cetera. And there were especially a lot of people who started on the internet, you know, with DeviantArt and things like that, talked about how you just got to keep building up your social media presence so that when you do put something out, you've already got an army of people who are ready to buy.
But you dropped a couple names. Do you remember what, like Peter David, Colleen Doran, do you remember what they said?
Colleen Doran talked about doing it all herself. Peter David talked about how it's the company's job to push the book if they own it.
Talked about this in the past, especially when I had the comic shop. And we had actually kind of both means going, where there were times where a creator, and I wish I could remember, I know Mark Wade was one of them, and I cannot remember the other guy. He was a DC guy, and he actually sent something to the shop, and he must have gotten our name from whomever, Diamond, or from being in the back of Comic Fires Guide or whatever, saying,
or being
this is
in
my
Wizard
book.
You were in Wizard, too.
Well, I was in Wizard. I was in the Star Wars Report. But he sent something saying, you know, this is my book. This is what I'm doing. I'd like you to give it a try. And I did order a few more for it. I mean, obviously, it's not a book that sticks with me. In the case of Mark Wade, I believe it was I gave a good review on Marvel Team Up. I think it might have been just Mark Wade in general. I say anything Mark Wade writes, I'll buy. I often talk about the creator of Brewhead. And if you excuse me a second while I fire up the old Cray 4000, stand back. This is going to be messy. Oh, there it is right there. He actually sent me, we're talking Mike Pascale. He sent me a metallic logo foil cover and said, this is my book. Would you consider buying it? And I bought direct from him. I bought it through Diamond. And this was, of course, mid-90s when comics were, well, they were past the Death of Superman start of Image, but still riding the crest. And because he did that, Brewhead became one of our better sellers. But again, both ways, I feel, and I'm talking from an ex-retailer standpoint, if you can reach out, even if you're a local guy, I mean, we've got a lot of local guys in town, but even if you could reach out and just say, hey, I'm doing this book. Can I count on your support to your local retailers? I mean, how often do we see guys like Pat Gleason or versus like Dan Juergens actually appearing in a local comic shop promoting their work? Or are they home working on their work?
You know? Well, I think there's a lot of it. Well, first I want to talk a little about the history.
In the beginning, there was nothing. Depending on your religion.
No, in the beginning, there was nothing. Even in the 70s, the only publicity that Marvel or DC did was house ads.
Yeah.
You know, conventions were something that I think there were, you know, there were small conventions. I remember when San Diego, you know, through the 70s, they were happy if they had 1,000 people. Think about that. I remember going to the Chicago Con in 84 and 85, and it was a big deal that they had over 12,000, that they had over 20,000 people. I mean, it was a big deal. They, you know, full page in Comic Buyer's Guide. But in the 70s, there wasn't publicity because it was the, you know, the comic creators didn't matter. You know, to the hardcore fans, they did, but the companies, you know, you can look at how artists would change issue to issue. Doesn't matter as long as the book's out.
And you also didn't have a problem where books would sell out so bloody fast and you didn't have a chance to get it. You know,
well,
it wasn't.
It happened.
I mean,
once
nowadays.
In a while.
It did, but nowadays we already know when a book is...
Howard the Duck number one.
But Howard the Duck number one didn't sell out. We didn't know it sold out before it even was published.
No, but we heard about how it sold out so fast. And the story was such a big deal in that, I guess, the distribution... It was bought at the distribution level by people. So it wasn't even getting to stores. I'm reading Conversations with Steve Gerber. And he talks about how Howard the Duck, he was mad that it sold out before getting to like grocery stores and 7-Elevens. He was like, you know, the first issue, nobody got their hands on it because the speculators bought them all at the distribution level.
Well, and everybody was gaming on Spider-Woman at the time, too, because yeah, they thought that was going to be the big seller.
Well, Howard the Duck was nuts. Spider-Woman came later.
Well, that was the thing. At the time, the retailers jumped on Spider-Woman because it was like, oh, Spider-Man, Spider-Woman. Howard the Duck came out of nowhere and nobody was really paying attention, even with Spider-Man's appearance in it.
But in the 70s, they didn't publicize comics outside of your comic.
Do you remember when you picked up your first catalog that a distributor had? I know mine was Advance Comics, but I really don't remember when I picked it up.
I remember that they had handouts in the 80s because I would, at our comic shop, it would be, okay, this new series is starting. We need to know if you want it before thus and such date. And it was just a handout. And
that
by the
was
time
probably
I...
the same time, because that would be when Gruber and I started buying to invest and to do the Weekend Warrior shtick, where, okay, here's your catalog. Rather than come and hope to pick up comics on the shelf, you could pre-order them and have them waiting for us. So that was probably it for me. And that would have had to been like, I think 83, maybe pre-83, 84, right about that time when we started using Advance Comics. I've been using it ever since. And I think the only other things that were out, I think the Comic Buyer Guide newspaper was out.
And the Comic Reader.
Yes,
by the time I started at comic shops, the Comics Reader had pretty much faded. But through the 70s, that was the Comics Reader was thought of as the TV guide of comics. Because it would get the list of here's what's coming out before it was published. And they would get that, you know, Marvel, DC, they'd actually get it from Western or Gold Key and Carlton. And then the Comics Buyer's Guide, by the time I started going to comic shops, Comic Buyer's Guide had become a tabloid newspaper. And it would have, here are the books that are coming out for the next 3 months.
Oh, yeah, the big list in back that was broken down.
And that was where your publicity was in the 80s, for the most part.
Yeah, I remember the story, like, you talked about house ads. Climbing into Schindler's downtown Minneapolis and discovering ROM number one, which was amazing, because up until then, they didn't have any house ads for it. I don't recall seeing a house ad till like, issue two or three was on the shelf.
And
I was like, oh my God, it's a Marvel. House ad
too.
I got to pick it up. It's a Marvel. I was a bit of a Marvel zombie back then.
Do you remember the house ad itself?
I think it was the page that Rom had, you know, Rom came flying and poosh, he comes out of a big explosion. Rom has landed.
Yeah, it was, it showed this meteor crashing on Earth and him coming out in flames.
Now you Rom compare that to landed. The other two properties, the Micronauts and the Shogun Warriors. I remember those house ads long before. Well, maybe within months of number one's hitting, because I was ready for it. And that was the time I was buying from Greg Ketter's shop, the Complete Enchanter, downtown Minneapolis. It was like, okay, Micronauts Shogun Warrior. I'm looking for him. I'm waiting for him.
And then in the 80s, you had the Comic Buyer's Guide, and there would be house ads and articles.
Yeah.
And Peter David has talked about how, you know, everybody at Marvel, they knew to put their house ads in either Amazing Heroes, which was from Fantagraphics. It started as kind of a way to fund a lawsuit that they were fighting. And it became every 2 weeks, here's this magazine that would have, you know, longer articles than the Comic Buyer's Guide. It would have hero histories, things like that. But it would have pretty much the same ads as the Comic Buyer's Guide. They wouldn't have the one ads in the back, but they would have all the publisher's ads. And they would also list, here's what's going to be in comic shops in 2 weeks. And any interviews you got were in a magazine called Comics Interview, run by Dave Kraft, or the Comics Journal. And the Comics Journal, by the 80s, was getting further and further away from interviewing mainstream comic creators. They just
remember
underground and indie folk.
The other big thing that came out in 83.
Hmm.
Marvel Age.
Yeah.
Marvel Age number one was, what was it? 25 cents.
Yep.
And it was basically a house organ for Marvel Comics. And oftentimes, I mean, some of those we've talked in the past, some of them have gone up in value for collectors, especially I'm looking like at number 12 that has, for some reason, the other ones are like a quarter, $3, $4. Number 12, $13 near mint. And some guys got one for 30 because it has, must have the Secret Wars thing. But that was, I remember buying those as well because, you know, I was a Marvel guy and this was a way they could push. I mean, do you remember who was on the cover of that Marvel Age number one?
Wasn't it Crystar?
You are correct. Give that man a dime. Crystar, of all things. That was a licensed product.
Well, they needed to push it.
DC did not have... Did they had a giveaway to Direct Currents, but I don't recall it as... I don't know. To me, I was like, why doesn't DC have one of these too?
I agree. DC's was a four-page thing that would just list what was coming out and maybe have two or three articles in it. And I always wondered why they didn't put as much money into the marketing as Marvel did. And now I know why. They didn't have it. They didn't have the money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, I'll give you a quarter for what's coming up in DC. I mean, Marvel Age was about as much fun to read as half the comics were.
But if you had a indie comic, forget it. But then... 1984, something happened that changed everything. Does Joe know what was the first independent comic that put out a press release?
I think it was Pacific Comics, wasn't it? Was it Destroyer Duck? Because they were trying to fight to get Howard the Duck out of Marvel Comics?
Nope.
Nope.
1984.
That was my guess.
Two guys in the Northeast were doing a parody comic. They'd done another comic that didn't sell at all, but they were doing a parody comic, so they sent out a press release that got picked up by the Associated Press for this new comic called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, no one had ever sent out a press release to the Associated Press or UPI or any of those wire services because they thought, well, you know, no, they're not going to get picked up. Who cares? And Marvel and DC at the time didn't know how to do it. But they had an uncle who worked at a newspaper who said, oh, yeah, you know, just send out a press release. Here's how to format it. Here's how to send it. And the weird thing is it got picked up by tons of newspapers because newspapers just go to, like, these wire services to look to fill space. Back in the 80s, newspapers, the publishers, didn't give a shit about the news. It's all right, we have this many ads, you need to write articles to fill space around them. And if they didn't have enough local articles, they'd just grab some off the wire. So this press release about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles got run in hundreds of newspapers. They printed 3,000 copies of the first issue. And it sold out day one. And they took the money from that and they went back to press. And one of the reasons there was such a delay for each issue, you know, like issue two was going to be coming in 2 months and it was like 4 or 5 months later, because they had to keep reprinting each issue. They would sell out and the distributors go, we need more. And these guys didn't know how to run a publishing company. They were just a couple of kids. So they would go back to their printer and go, we have this much money. How many can we print? And from there, more and more publishers started getting in on sending out press releases. The biggest one, you may have even known this, because it was DC made a big deal about this initiative, that they were going to send out press releases and publicity kits. They had people from Warner helping them for three series coming out. This was in 1985. Joe, do you know what those three series were?
In 85?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Dark Knight, Watchmen, and Crisis.
Close. Dark Knight, Crisis, and Ambush Bug.
Ambush Bug.
I was working at the college paper at Western Illinois University, and they got the publicity kit. They said, hey, you know comics. Want to write something up about these? And I went, oh, wow, yeah, Dark Knight, I'm really interested in that. Watchmen, oh, yeah. Ambush Bug, I'm interested in Ambush Bug, but Ambush Bug?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I remember Ambush Bug comic strips that you could run and did run in the daily newspaper, the college newspaper for University of Minnesota. And we've talked in the past about how a box of graphic novels showed up at the radio station I was working at as a big giveaway. And nobody knew what to do, and I kind of took it upon myself to do it because I knew graphic novels. And so, yeah, they were trying to push graphic novels out as not for kids, you know, trying to get college kids involved and people into it. I think the ads were for Dreamhaven, too. They ran them, which was smart because they're located right on the University of Minnesota campus there.
Well, and let's also remember, this was back when you and I started in our comics retail journey. DC especially, but Marvel as well, was offering a form of co-op where if you ran an ad that was one of their approved ads, what was it? Because you ran it on TV.
Well, they were pay in half the 90s and you pay now. Half. Yeah, we're in the 90s now.
But it started in the 80s.
Yeah. Because I just looked up, the other thing that started in the 90s was Wizard Magazine.
Yeah.
July 1991. And I don't recall if I picked it up or not. I remember I would pick it up occasionally. But unless they had, I think I take that back. Because I do recall sending in the coupons in the middle. Because for every coupon you send in, you would get a Unity Zero or a special only issue available if you mailed away for it. So oftentimes, if it was something hot, you'd buy multiple magazines to send in multiple coupons. And of course, by the time I opened my store in November 92, that was just SOP. You know, I would get the Wizards in, pull out five, and mail them in. So then I would actually, and often the weird thing that I thought was funny was that I had people that would, hey, are you going to mail that in and get one? I go, yeah, why don't you just buy Wizard and do it? Nah, I'll just buy it from you, which made like zero sense to me because it's cheaper just to buy the magazine, mail it in. Well, maybe not, because you had to buy the magazine, you had to buy the comic, you know, under the guise of shipping and handling. Whatever, I would just get them in. And then, of course, Wizard had ways of stoking the market, because if I ordered 25 or more, I could get an exclusive gold edition or the Ace edition or
gold,
good. So, and then,
one of the things with Wizard was they found out really early that they could push books, because they, their first batch of issues. Boy, they had a real hard on for Vertigo.
Valiant. Or Valiant. Yeah, yeah.
They had a real hard on for Valiant.
Later, and yeah,
And I remember at the time working at Schindler's. Now, Schindler's would, we were talking about co-op. Schindler's milked that co-op like you can't believe. They would run ads in the sports section on the third page of the Star Tribune on certain days. And they would set them up in such a way so that either Marvel or DC paid for them, even though it was mostly for, you know, because if you used their layout, they'd pay half and you'd pay half. It wasn't like now where it's if you want to do co-op, they give you credit. Nope, it was cash
money.
Yeah,
you got cash back.
But, you know, when Wizard first came out, Schindler's didn't give a shit. They didn't care. But pretty quickly, they found that whatever Wizard would push as a back issue or a new issue would sell. So we would get stacks of Wizard. And I think part of it was because Wizard was also available through newsstands. So they'd just order a few, you know, through Cap City. And then they'd get all of the Wizards that were to go to newsstands at Schindler's. And they would blow out there. But we were told when a new issue of Wizard came out, if you were the comic person, you were to take before you put them out, you were to go through whatever they pushed as a hot back issue, you were to grab and put away. And then the next month, see what they put it as a price. So there were people, remember, comic shops could get their comics on Thursday nights. We had people who would buy Wizard at College of Comic Book Knowledge. They'd be there first thing Friday morning with the list of whatever Wizard had told them to put, whatever was pushing.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it really set off the second speculator boom, because the first speculator boom was through Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, and that led to the black and white craze of the 80s, where any black and white was hot. Fish Police, Kung Fu Kangaroos, generic geriatric gerbils, Penguin, whatever.
Penguin Samurai.
Yes, that was Penguin the last Samurai, one I remember. Launched, Pat and I buying tons of, and it just kind of flopped. I will take a left turn here.
What was that? The publisher, Slave Labor. That started Slave Labor.
When's the first time, did you ever pick up Comic Shop News? That's the weekly newspaper that's still available through your better comic shops.
Schindler's refused to get it because basically you would buy it and then you had to give it away.
Yeah, it was started in 87.
Oh, no. We got to sell it.
Yeah. I mean, I used to get it and I remember putting piles of it away. You know, recycling them when they got old. And for a while, we started aggressively putting them into people's bags. And
they didn't want them.
Well, some did, some didn't. I tell most people, if I give you something free, you don't like it, just recycle it. But that's still around today. And I don't even know how influential it is or if people use it even. But it must be doing something because they say they have given away over 1,400 a week. And I know I pick up the previews for like when they do the preview for the next quarter or they have the big Fred Hembeck cover for the Christmas thing or whatever. So because it's mostly some news, original comic content, and other things. And like I said, not every store carries it because, as Corey alluded to, they buy it in a bundle of 100 and then they give it away. So it may not... You know, for a smaller shop, and I don't even think I ordered it for when I did Crazy Comics, but I did get it with the bigger store.
Now, another reason that exists and still exists, pretty much every article in there is paid for.
Yeah.
If you want to be cover featured, you buy that. And again, that's the publisher buying it. It's not like Comic Shop News goes, hey, we really like this comic that's coming out this week. Let's talk to the publisher so we could get a cover to put on our giveaway. Nope. DC, Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, they come to them and say, this week is when blah, blah, blah comes out. We want to buy that cover. We want to have this article. or they will go to the publishers and go, for summer, we're doing science fiction. So if you want to buy an ad in our science fiction issue, the deadline is this. They're what is known as an ad zine, where they don't, you know, they're not a newspaper. They don't exist to break news. They're not doing journalism.
By the way, if you want to check it out, go to CSN Insider. Get it? Comic Shop Insider. CSNSIDER.com. And they give you a little blurb about it. They have a copy of number one you can look at from 1987. You can fire up on their Twitter machine. And they also feature the covers like Corey talked about. But it's if you're a distributor, if you're a comic store, you get it through Diamond Comics. And they actually promote the comic book locator service. So, again, if you're interested, talk to your local comic store. They have to buy it. They get it in bundles of 90, but I get them, and then every so often I just recycle them. Except I do keep the ones that have the Fred Hembeck covers because I kind of like those.
It's one of those where, you know, we get our books through DCB Service. I'd love if DCB Service bought it and threw one in there, but they don't, and I'm not going to worry about it that much because Lord knows I get enough comic news.
Yeah. So now. Nowadays,
let's talk about how it is currently.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about previews. I mean, we do a show a month on previews where that's where we get a lot of the information. Online, certainly I get stuff through Bleeding Cool. I see a lot of stuff on Facebook. I do appreciate it when comic creators, whether it's Mark Stegbauer, our good buddy, or Peter David, mention, hey, I'm doing this. Because there's a lot of, I don't know, what do you call it, information overload, and any little bit to catch my eye, especially if you're pushing something that's not going to be in previews, because previews is probably the number one way that I find out what's coming up. We don't really cover in this podcast, you know, we talk about breaking news stuff. But we don't really cover a lot. Oh, this came out of San Diego. This came out of New York, blah, 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 all this news. Because that's kind of, you can find that almost anywhere on the net if you're so tied into it. Because a lot of times Corey knows things that I don't know yet. Because I'm kind of like, when I had my comic shop, I always talked about I existed in three realities. What's coming out now, what's coming out 2 months from now, and what I've got to reorder. And so if it wasn't in one of those three things, it didn't exist. You'd come and say, oh, when's the next Battle Chaser coming out? Well, it didn't come out this week. It's not in the previews this month. And I cannot backorder it. So to me, it doesn't exist. And I suspect for most retailers, it's that way as well. Because they are constantly in one of those three states. And they also look back to see, well, what did sell? What, and this is just comic books. I'm not talking graphic novels because it's a whole different animal.
I think there's a fourth world that they live in now that you didn't have to deal with as much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is every Friday you have final order cutoff.
I had cutoff, but it was monthly, not. And that, yeah. That started coming around towards the end of Hot Comics. And. Yep. As technology progressed, it was more of a godsend because that was, you would be able to up an order, if, especially like number one came out, sold out real fast. Well, you can still up orders on two and three. Or if it really stunk, you could lower it. They kind of did it with when I had Crazy Comics 2004, 2006. Occasionally they'd come and they'd say, well, you know, I'm trying to think of a Ms. Mystic number 7 is really late. Here's your chance to lower sales if you want. And by doing that, that way they weren't returnable because that's just more expense for Diamond. But yeah, the final cutoff date really after I sold Crazy or shut down Crazy Comics, that is probably a godsend for a lot of comic shops, especially like I said, if you know something's hot, or if there's a second print coming or third print or whatever. Although that's not necessarily a pancreas for
a
sale.
Pancreas?
Yeah, you know.
I think you mean panacea.
No, pancreas. I'll go with what I said.
Pancakes?
Pancakes. Are we going back to Original Pancake Company?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, guys, hold still. We'll start this podcast up in a little bit. Oh, God, those are good waffles.
Yeah, I got the strawberry waffles this time with real whipped cream.
I waited for that apple thing for 20 minutes. It was worth it. But anyways, we're back to the podcast, folks. What were we talking about? Oh, blueberry season. Yeah. No, that wasn't
final order cutoff.
Yeah. I may have to call Tim and ask him. Let me write that down. How does he use that final order cutoff? Or if he does.
But now, you know, back when you had Crazy Comics, there were a couple of comic podcasts. Now there are 100 bajillion.
But no one's a national treasure like us.
That's true. But there are a lot of comic creators who I talk to who, like, you know, I have to make the rounds. I have a new book coming out, and they have a list of like 10 to 20 podcasts that they do when they're going to be on, when they got a new comic coming out. Or they may even do more if they have a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more smaller creators have to do their own publicity. And I think one of the things for that is, especially at Marvel and DC, you know, once you're owned by a big corporation, and I will talk as the person here who works for a major corporation and has worked for major corporations. The number one thing that they look at in your department is, do you make money? When I worked at American Express, I worked in one section where we found, basically, if somebody moved their money from one mutual fund to another, they got a much lower... The person who sold it got a much lower commission because that money was already with the company. But they didn't have a way to track it. This was in the 90s, so they didn't have a way to track it. They would just, oh, look, this person sold, you know, $50,000 worth of shares of this. And it was the job, my first job there, to track, was this a new sale where they would get their full commission? Or just moving money where they would get a partial commission. And our first year, we saved literally millions of dollars. So when I was in that department, we got raises. Four times a year, we got to leave the office for a day and go do something fun. They rented a boat and we were on the Mississippi River. There was another time where the departments that made money, they hired Huey Lewis and the News to perform at a park, and we all got this high-end catered barbecue dinner. And I wanted to work in HR. So I put in and got moved over to HR. HR does not generate money. HR spends money. They spend money and they do it through their legal, and they're required to do it for legal processes. So we didn't get four times a year. We got once a year. There were no bonuses. And our once a year thing is, well, you guys can go to the lake and get Subway. Here you go. Here's your 6-foot sandwich.
Sandwich.
Who's performing? Nobody.
No sandwich for you.
Nobody's performing. It's, you get a half day off to go eat a sandwich at the lake. So I imagine the publicity department, there are two things going on, and Peter David and Fabian Nicasia both talked about it because they worked at Marvel in the 90s, and the publicity department had a lot of power then. But would they publicize a new book? Would they publicize a book that's not doing well? No. They would publicize a book that everybody knew would sell well. They'd publicize the X-Men and they'd publicize Spider-Man. That way, they could point to the sales and go, look at those huge sales. We did that. Because the publicity department saw people getting laid off right and left. So it's, well, we need to justify our jobs. So the X-Men are going to do this Age of Apocalypse thing. Oh, we'll put 30% of our ad buys into that. That way, when it comes out, and there are 10 new X-Men number ones in 1 month, and the sales are all a half million each, we could say, well, look at what we did. We publicized this story, and each comic in it sold 10 million, sold a half million copies. And that's a very corporate thing. But now, Marvel and DC are part of bigger entities. And those bigger entities, there will be times when they do ads outside of the comics. But in comics, they send out a press release. They might buy an ad or two on, Comic Book Resources, CBR. Or they used to buy ads on Newsarama, but not anymore because Newsarama has become kind of a list website. Are they going to buy ads on podcasts? No, they have their own podcast.
See, now,
Crazy Comics and Stories, listen to the Marvel podcast.
Here's where I want to actually throw some cold water on the industry. And I wish I was part of this conversation that you were talking about. But like I said, I got enough problems online. I don't need to join the Twitter. I don't think it matters because we're a dying industry. Comic books are dying in the format we have now in terms of old farts like you and me, Corey, going to comic shops week after week, buying comics. We're going extinct. And a lot of this is borne out to the fact by, and Corey, you already know the answer. What's the number one selling graphic novel?
Dog Boy! No, yep. Dog Man.
And it's not even in comic shops. Why are there... Ms. Marvel is a young Muslim teen. Why, the Legion of Superheroes is coming out with younger kids and different races and creeds and colors and sexes. We're not the target market for a lot of this stuff. I mean, I've been watching the Legion of Superhero boards. People are going ballistic. Oh my God, they changed the sex. Oh my God, they changed the color. Oh my God, they changed that he's a brick and not a snake. And all I can think of is, you guys are just old farts.
It's not for you anymore.
I want my client. Yeah, if you want to come along, they're not going to say no. But you've had your run with the Legion. They need to make it relevant. Sales are anemic. They suck. The only reason we have Marvel Comics and DC Comics is because they are part of a much, much larger corporation. And as long as that larger corporation can suck the marrow out of Marvel Comics and DC Comics and make movies and toys and video games, and even video games aren't doing that great. Just ask GameStop.
There's another reason for that. You want to know why GameStop's not doing well?
Nobody plays video games.
Wrong. Why should I go to a store and buy a physical disc when I have my Xbox? Oh, you want to buy this game? Yeah, here it is. It's $44.95. Bing! Bought it. Date came out. I don't need the disc. It's stored there forever in the cloud for the rest of my life. Now, you and I know that that's not 100% accurate, that they could at any time say, oh, no, you're going to have to buy it again.
But guess what? We just had a sunspot and the cloud doesn't exist anymore.
But people are buying their games digitally now. It's not that video games are doing poorly. They're doing great. But the sales of the physical discs are dying out because teenagers and younger adults don't want the physical media cluttering up their house.
And which is why comic books don't sell the way they used to. They will in graphic novels. I talk about watching the kids read Black Panther, read Miles Morales Spider-Man, read Spider... what is Gwen called now?
Ghost Spider.
They love Ghost Spider. They love the young Captain Marvel. They love Ms. Marvel. I watch them. They read these graphic novels. They're not reading the comics, guys. We are a fossil. We are a dinosaur. Remember what I used to call? And I called my shop this way back when I bought Hot Comics St. Paul. I'm a niche market. I cater to a small group of fans. If I can suddenly catch wind and somebody decides because Spider-Man Homecoming was the best thing since sliced bread, and everybody's beating down my door for a copy of the latest Spider-Man comic. You know the last time that happened, Corey? This is for a dime, by the way.
I remember... Gosh. I know the X-Men, they boofed that. The last time I remember it really was Batman.
Nope.
The Batman movie, people went crazy, and no matter what we put on the shelf at Schindler's that said Batman, it was gone. Next day, it was gone.
See, I didn't have the shop then. For me, Death of Superman. Yeah. That was when people that don't normally pay attention to comics came into the shop, and that was, of course, the first week I had the shop. Nothing has happened since then. Everything is just,
I think Walking Dead, I doubt it was, you know, lines around the block, but if you look at Walking Dead graphic novels, they did okay.
Not
and then when the TV show started, boom.
Yeah,
The comic jumped in sales from the mid-20s to the 60s and 70s.
Which is pathetic, considering what... That was cancel zone when I had my comic shop. Gary Groth from Fangraphics said, comics are dying because if you constantly look at the way the sales were back in the Golden Age, when there wasn't a lot of media, they've constantly trending downward. Occasionally you get blips where they go up. The direct market, Dark Knight, Image, and even to this day, like you said, Walking Dead. But you, when you used to go on and on with the sales, it's always fascinating because you talk about, well, yeah, they did 20, 30,000. No, Cancel Zone was 50,000 back when I had Hot Comics. And it's just constantly going downwards. I would love to know, and I think some creators would, if things like the DC and the Marvel Online or Comicology or that makes any difference to these guys' sales or to their cut of the action.
With the Marvel Unlimited, nobody gets a cut. With DC, it's in their contract that they get a cut, but no one is talking about what that cut is, because I remember Dan Jurgens told me specifically to my face that DC would never do an all-you-could-eat service like Marvel Unlimited because there are royalty agreements. Now, I don't know what changed, but obviously something changed. Comixology and Amazon both, they treat that like a regular sale. And also, you can buy comics digitally one at a time for Marvel. That's treated as a regular sale for royalties. But here's the thing that Gary Groth and people like that keep missing. Yes, individual sales of individual monthly comics are about where they were a decade ago. They even, I would say, up to 15 years ago. They go up sometimes, they go down sometimes, but for the most part, they're around the same. However, both Marvel and DC, according to C.B. Cebulski at Marvel, Marvel's making record profits. So how is that? Forcing their way into other markets. You can't say that it's their licensing, because that's all handled by the corporate overlord.
And we've talked about that in the past. All these different markets are cooking up. There's a reason why Star Wars and Marvel action is at IDW and not at Marvel. There's a reason why Disney proper, Mouse, Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge, are somewhere else and not being published by Marvel. Marvel does one thing good, superheroes. There's no reason to do anything else.
Now let's get back to the central question. Whose job is it to sell comics? When a publisher says we're publishing this book, whose job is it to get the word out, to get fans to know about it, to do publicity?
In a perfect world, it should be the comic book company. But again, they are a pimple on the butt of a huge media organization. So for Marvel, DC, they aren't going to spend a lot of money on it other than whipping up us dwindling fanboys. So I don't see them doing it. Comic shop? I don't know. I constantly am amazed by the fact that when I had comic shops, I oftentimes would rip up a Diamond Comics previews just to get the ad out of it to put on the wall so someone could come by and see it. I spent $50 getting that gigantic, what was that, 12 by 12 foot Wonder Wall grease board. So every month or week I could write on, here's things that are coming out, just to try to catch the eye of people that didn't buy the previews every month. You constantly rail about licensed products. Why are they spending all this money on licensed product? They're not making money at it. But those are the type of things, and you know, I've talked about it too. I can't get my kids interested. They love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My wife loves X-Files. They don't care about the comics. So, the comic shop's got to be nimble, fast, and I don't think you can even count on co-op or any type of success or monies from up high, other than here's your previews catalog.
And here's another problem that a comic shop would have that you might have had at some point in the 90s, but it faded away by the end of the 90s. There's so much shit coming out.
Yeah.
There's so much shit coming out. There are more comics being printed now than any time in history. Even more than at the peak in the 40s and 50s, there are more individual comics coming out. And if it's not, you know, if it's not a known property, you're going to put it on the shelf and people are going to go, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's a problem. I mean, we luck out because we got shops like Hot Comics and Comic College and The Source who have huge lines, and they pretty much can order anything, and they most of them pretty much order everything. When I had Hot Comics, I was convinced I could sell at one copy of almost anything. And I did, even maybe not off the shelf, because like Cerebus, I had enough people buying Cerebus, I could put one Cerebus on the shelf. And then I would catch that person and say, hey, add it to your list. Rinse, lather, repeat. Things like X-Men, Spawn, Batman, Superman, they pretty much sell themselves. You're either in it or you're out of it. But take a book like Legion of Superheroes that's coming out. How would you get that into a fan's hands, especially someone who has no idea who these people were or why it is such a big deal?
Well, they're spinning it out of the Superman books, but really, you know, think of all the new, you know, take a look at DC. We'll talk about it when we get previews. How many new number ones there are? Oh, and there are these, even though they've, we don't do Vertigo anymore. We don't do Mad anymore. We don't do this. We've got the Young Animal line. We have the Joe Hill line. We have the DC Black. We have more.
And you're counting on the fact that it's going to catch our attention.
Yeah.
All the books in it, and you know, we don't even cover what we buy month to month. We'll probably do that when January rolls around. We'll do another, this is what we buy regular. And you know, we're doing our part. We're promoting. We're usually pretty positive about it. Get down to the, one thing that a lot of shops have now that I didn't, you got social media. You want to push your products that you get in. You want to say, hey, I've got Walking Dead. We're doing this or whatever. Here's Legion of Superheroes. It's coming back. This is the history of it, blah, blah, blah. We're taking orders for it. You know, you can create your own excitement through social media. If a comic shop, I mean, I busted a butt trying to get a website, and I don't think I ever did for any of my shops, worth note. But now with Facebook, with Twitter, with Instagram, you've got your own fire machine, and you can make the heat you want and get people going. And I'll talk about it when we get to geeking, because there's a couple shops that I want to mention, things like that. How about at a creator level? What would you say to a creator?
If I were a comic creator, I would say that unless you're on a big name book or you've got a big enough fan base before doing a new book, half your job is doing the book and the other half is promoting it.
Even if it is a big company.
Even if you're Mark Waid. Mark Waid goes out and does the publicity rounds. Carl Kessel goes out and does the publicity rounds. I think it's important as a creator to realize that in today's world, your job is to sell your stuff, even if someone else is publishing it. Image is like a, what do they call it, a co-partner, where if they accept you, you get, Image will do these things for you. But you're the one who has to go out and do your publicity.
Yeah,
you're the
one who has to send out them a fee to do it.
And also, you're the one who has to drum up interest in your book. And I would say, even if you're at Marvel and you're not on the X-Men or Spider-Man, if you're on even a book like Punisher or Ghost Rider, you need to be the one going out and at conventions, handing out the preview of it, going on podcasts and interviewing, setting up interviews with comic book resources and comicbook.com and all of that. Because the comic company themselves, they're going to push what's right for them. You have to build a groundswell for you. And I will always go back to when Peter David took over the Hulk. When he took over the Hulk, nobody said this at the time, but Byrne had basically burned the book so bad that it was near cancellation. You know, it had bumped up when Byrne came on, and then when he left, the bottom fell out. And it really didn't matter who took over the book after that, because it was, he only did 6 issues. Shops just said, yeah.
It was such a big deal because he was coming off. They did that big switch between Alpha Flight and Hulk, the creative teams, you know, which was kind of fun at the time.
And Alpha Flight wasn't doing well either. They were trying to do something. He left and the bottom fell out of the sales. So what Peter David did, because he was in the publicity department, he sent a press release to the Comic Buyer's Guide who said, if you read the first issue and write a letter to Marvel about it, I will write you back and give you a photocopy of an upcoming cover. And he said that that started the sales going up. He saw an uptick then. And what would happen was every time he would announce that there was a, you know, 3 or 4 part story and they'd put it on the cover, sales would go up again. To the point where when he did that Countdown 4-part story that had the Walt Simonson covers, The publicity department at Marvel was coming to him and going, oh, well, what are you doing with this Countdown? How can we, you know, publicize this? Because he said flat out, I'd raised the sales enough, and they had looked at the sales charts to see that every time I did one of these, sales would trend up for each issue. They wanted to take ownership of that. So they would come to me rather than me going to them or having to go around them.
So what you're saying is you need to go to your friendly bookstore like we did for podcasting and buy one of those Marketing for Dummies.
Yeah.
And use it.
And the other thing is, you know, you've got free advertising. When I remember when I first got on MySpace, the first thing I did was started looking for the comic creators I like. Joe, was that because I wanted to be fanboy or I wanted to be their pal? Nope. I wanted to know what they were working on. Because they would go, oh, I've got this book coming out. And they were just doing it because it was the thing to do. Now you've got people like Matt Wagner, whose work I love anyway. But Matt Wagner, 3 months before a book is in previews, hey, I just signed the contract for this. A month before it's in previews, hey, I just got done with the cover for the first issue. It's going to be in previews next month. As time for the book comes out, he puts more and more to the point where he was doing Mage every Sunday. Here's the page I worked on. It would be without the lettering. It wouldn't be colored. It would be, you know, here it is. It's inked. Here's your Mage Sunday page. Or Joel McCrea, who's doing, he did Dead Rabbit. Now they're doing it, they couldn't call it that because it's a copyrighted term in Ireland. So it's now Dead Eyes. He's pushing it. That's all he posts about. or when he's posting a commission. Hey, for Day of Dread, I did this Dread thing, and guess what's coming out in 3 weeks? So more and more and more, they have to really push their own stuff. And you've got Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everything else to do so. And if you're a creator and you're not doing that, if you don't have a running list of podcasts that, hey, I got this new book coming out, I will email all the hosts and go, hey, I've got this coming out. Do you want to interview me about it? I've gotten a few of those. I'm not going to say who told me, because I talk about it on the podcast and I can't think of them all off the top of my head. And at Ahoy, one of the things they do that is just brilliant, they've gotten the list of every, you know, podcaster, website, etc. Every week. Hey, here's what we're announcing this week. These people are available for interviews. This is some of, if you want to run preview art, here it is. They're sending that out. The publisher's doing it. And it helps that all of the, you know, the main writers are also owners of the company. But you've got to do that. And one of the biggest things for that is there's so much information being shoveled at you at rapid speed. What I talk about in previews all the time, the damn thing's over 600 pages. And once you get past the five, I forget what they're called, preview publishers or
premier
publishers.
Yeah.
Once you get past the five preview publishers, oh my God, the print is tiny. The pages are terribly designed and it's just, oh, here's an ad.
Yeah.
So you get lost in the shuffle. Fantagraphics has a mailing list that they've been using for at least 15 years. I get a catalog from Fantagraphics once a year. Here's what we have available. Here's what's coming out over the next year. I doubt there are a lot of publishers that could do that, but because they're a prestige publisher that only publishes books now, they work more with book distributors, and book distributors, they want to know what you're publishing for the next year. Same with Drawn and Quarterly. Same with other things. A lot of people who are omnibus collectors have tapped into where Marvel and DC send that information to the book distributors. So we really know the hardcovers and major softcovers that DC and Marvel are putting out for the next year. Marvel's not ready to gear up on it, but I think as a creator, as much as it should be the publisher's job, as much as it should be the distributor's job, as much as it should be the comic shop's job, it's your job to make sure people know about your book and want to buy it. Put out those preview pages. Do those interviews. Build hype. There was one creator, I don't even remember who it was, but they said, I feel like I should apologize because I'm not putting out as much personal information. I'm just putting out hype. And I actually messaged him and said, you need to put out hype. You're on page 350 of a 600-page catalog that you may, if you're lucky, someone will spend 10 seconds on. You should be pushing this every time you go online. And the other thing is, you know, on your feed, you think it's there and, oh, wow, I've made my one big post for the day. Guess what? That's going to scroll off people's feeds within an hour. Jerry Seinfeld talked about it with Twitter. He said, why should I waste my jokes on Twitter? I'll put it up and it speeds by. Most people won't see it, and the few who do, if they didn't log into Twitter today, they're not going to see anything from me. Why should I waste my jokes on that? And he's Jerry Seinfeld. He can get away with that. He sells tickets just being Jerry Seinfeld. But if you're Joe Schmo, the comic creator, you better be putting up that stuff on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at least once a day and maybe twice. Or let people know, hey, every Sunday at 6 o'clock, I publish a preview. Anything to add, Joe?
No, I think we got it covered. I mean, whether it was back in my day where you give me a phone call or actually mail me something versus nowadays, you don't even have to do that because Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know. And, of course, if at our level, you could do – well, we don't want you to do a rival podcast. You know, too many of us out there already. Although you could come on the show and tell us the books you like, you know. Because, or you could support these guys, our sponsors.
Promotional consideration is paid for by the following sponsors. Our first sponsor is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com has been with us since the beginning. They're the best web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a web host, and you do because, you know, Facebook, Google+, everything gets hacked. But if you set up your own web page, it'll never get hacked, unless you kind of make some mistakes or pick an easy password like password. But still, you can have your own web page. If you use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year. When you're at the office, do you often run to the vending machine for snacks? Those things are terrible for you. Instead, have snacks delivered to you. So go to graze.com. Graze.com has healthy snacks that you can decide what kind of snacks you want, how often you want them, whether they get delivered to you, or if you choose them every time. I myself get the subscription box every 2 weeks so that I have healthy things to eat when I'm at work. You can get a free box by using the code CORYS3R5P. Matter of fact, use that code your fifth and your first box are free. Again, that's CORYS3R5P. If you'd like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network shows, you can. Just send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. Wow, you did the plug this time.
I know. I just thought you know, I just sat back and I was sleeping while you were talking. But I mean, you know, just figured I'd just let you go on because you. You know, I think we covered it pretty good.
Well, you know what else? I cover a lot of other things on these other podcasts. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts for you. There's, of course, Crazy Comics and Stories, where myself and Crazy Joe Ryder get together once a week to talk comics. We review comics, we talk about upcoming comics, we talk about comics history, anything that has to do with comics, we're going to talk about. We also have Series in Review, where we review series and kind of give a DVD commentary of past comics that we've enjoyed. There is also Solitaire Rose Radio. Solitaire Rose Radio is my solo show where I discuss upcoming comics, past comics, comics history, and interview comics creators. These are all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. There's also the podcast I'm proudest of. That's Novelcast, where I take the novels that I have written and turn them into audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. Over at Bad Advice, myself, Dan Moore, and Wolfie B. Bad take your questions and give you bad advice. It's at badadvice.solitairerose.com. Now, don't think that I'm doing all the podcasts, because there's also Scrabbling Across the West by Dave Coffell and Stephanie Coffell. Dave is a musician and Stephanie is his wife. They travel the country performing music and playing Scrabble over at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. And finally, the newest member of the Solitaire Rose Radio group, that's Fantastic Forecast, where myself and host of For the Love of Comics, Adam Vermillion, go over the series The Fantastic Four, four issues at a time. That's available at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. If you would like to advertise on any of these podcasts, you can. Just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks.
Yeah, you're not big for sleep, are you?
Sleep is for the weak.
Weak.
And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, not where he takes plastic forks and turns them into sculptures. It's what's going on the eBays, Joe.
You know, what's funny is we were talking about our topic, and I have me here a stack of a magazine. Corey, do you remember Comics Retailer?
Yes, I do.
Comics Retailer was a magazine from, why can't I think of it? They did KP. Krauss, that's right. Krauss Publishing. Yeah, they did the aforementioned comic shop retailer or comic buyer's guide that we lovingly talk about that's no longer in existence. Well, they actually did a magazine free to comic retailers, $5 for everybody else. And it's Comic Retailers, Business Management for Comics and Gaming Industry. And I have a whole stack of them that I'll be putting on the eBay. So if you're interested, let me know, because it's a fascinating look at what was going on. Like this one here, I've got February 1996. Gunsmith Cats was coming out, and that was from AD Vision. So they're talking the movie. Anime, they were talking that. Retailer support profiles. They had professional help columns of Muffins and Marvels. Suggested for mature readers by Bruce G. Casa. That must have been a column or something. But all this stuff and stuff, it's kind of fun looking through it, looking at the different ads, what was going on at the time. Sometimes you get a creator interview, such as Dave Sim. The gentleman we love to talk about, Brian Hibbs, had his copy of Tilting at Windmills going on. So if you're interested, go check out the eBays, because they're going to be up there pretty soon, if not by the time this year podcast drops. Well, that's probably what I'll be doing while I'm sitting at work. In the meantime, I did put everything at I put a lot of cool stuff at 20% off, and some of it sold. A couple books sold, two from Aspen. I don't know, Corey, if you ever read Trish Out of Water or Executive Assistant Iris.
I have not read any of the Aspen books other than when they first started coming out. It was, ooh, this art is pretty, and I don't know what the hell's going on.
What they had did in 2013, they had a bunch of books out for a buck, so you could give it a shot for a buck. I think it was 10 for 10. And Trish Out of Water was, what would you do if your life was turned upside down before it ever really started? And Trish Powell is about to find out, as everything she thought she knew about being a teenager, friends, parents, her body, is all a lie. And then the other one, Executive Assistant Iris, is she's a secretary, bodyguard, and assassin rolled into one. And the ones I had on the eBays were the Source variant covers, because apparently if you bought like 100 of these things, you put them out for a buck a piece, you could get your variant cover on it. And they're not a lot of them on the eBays, and I know the Source sold out of them. So I had them up for 20% off. And not anymore. I did have a signed copy of Halloween Eve, which was a one-shot from Brandon Monclair and Amy Reeder doing the art. And Amy, who had been a visitor to the Fall Comic Con, or maybe it was Spring Con, I forget which one. But she autographed it, and I had it 20% off. Somebody snabbed it up right away. Good for you. I sold a Justice League of America number 143 from 1977, the classic Wonder Woman versus Superman fight, and this one was in pretty good shape. Last time, Corey, we were talking about copyrights, with about how Dave Sim got served with a couple copyrights notices because he kept putting Wolveroach on the cover. Well, the magazine, I just sold Four Color Magazine, Volume 1, Number 3 from 1987, talked about that from the Marvel standpoint. Also, I had a couple articles about Steve Ditko in it, which was cool. Sold a Batman number one. No, the new 52 version, not the cool original.
Now, how much did that go for? Because I was shocked when I found out how much the Batman number one from the new 52 sells for.
I sold it for $39.99.
That's just nuts.
I've sold them as high as 100. So, and when Gruber got his, he was going to buck it off. And I said, dude, you better go check the price on it is. Granted, the one I had, I got from Midtown Comics. And I think Scott Snyder had signed them all. But yeah, it's slowly eking down because it's always a race to the bottom. And I had it up for $50. I had it 20% off, and that's what it went for. So, and again, we've talked about it. They're not necessarily rare. They just were hot demand. But I think when they did that 5-year forward thing, it kind of cut the legs off on it. So you might be able to pick one up cheaper. I did sell my last Marvel Visionaries Hulk by Peter David, Volume 2. We were talking about his run earlier. Now I can get the Omnibus whenever that comes out 20 years from now. I had some photographs of Buffy the Vampire Slayer from the official fan club magazine. Ended up selling one of those. I don't remember. I think I'm towards the end. The last thing I sold before we get into last week's episode of what I sold, Captain America, What Price Glory. It's a 2003 series by Bruce Jones and Steve Rude. Did not sell for a lot, only about $6.50. And I do free shipping now. So if you want free shipping, you want 20% off, or you know the deal. If you see something you really like, just send me a quick note that you listen to this here podcast, and I'll see if I can either cut you a deal, or maybe I'll reach out and I'll grab this. What is this? It's a Internal Correspondence, another one of those magazines that Cap City put out. Remember, Diamond did Diamond Dialogue. Maybe I'll just toss one of those in for free, so you can kind of look back, and this one dates 1994 as well. See what's going on. Who knows? You don't know what I'm going to do. I'm crazy, and that's where you'll find me on the eBay. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I guzzle Diet Dr. Pepper while watching YouTube videos for hours on end.
Hey, I was going to do that after the podcast.
That's what I did last night.
Ooh.
No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I got to notice that Chrome won't support Flash at the beginning of the year. Boy, they're just picking on that speedster. I'm telling you.
Oh, God.
It really sucks because, I mean, I love using Chrome. But I guess, whatever, you're going to make me use Explorer. That's fine, be that way. I don't care. I don't think a lot of places use Flash, but I go to onemorelevel.com, which is all Flash games that people have put up for whatever. And I like playing some of those, so I'm kind of bummed out. What I'm really bummed out about this weekend, I believe, is it Crypticon was this weekend?
I believe so. I almost went.
Oh.
Joe, I almost went.
I've never gone. Why would you have gone?
Because Cheryl Lee is there, who played Laura Palmer on Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And she's one of the few celebrities I would actually want to meet. And then I saw how much it was to both get in and just get an autograph. Not a picture, just an autograph.
Yeah.
$150.
Yeah.
I would only pay $150 if Cheryl Lee hung out at my house for a weekend.
So you had Crypticon going on. And there are two other Comic Cons going on. Really weird. One was going on Saturday. One's going on even as we do this here podcast. And it kills me because I probably wouldn't have gone to Crypticon, but I love going to the little comic shows, not only to see what's going on, but knowing a lot of the major guys are at Crypticon, I'd probably get some good deals. The fact that tour going on, obviously different people putting them on. And but the problem is I got nothing. I had some big expenses. One of them was a rear tire. My PayPal account's at zero. That's one of the reasons I went 20% off on stuff, just trying to move some older stock. The cons don't come around that much. I mean, yeah, Corey and I went to Mind's Eye a couple weeks ago, and you know, I spent some money on some of the hardcovers and graphic novels. They were blown out at 70% off. So, I mean, I got enough, but I like going to the shows. You go see people you haven't seen. You know, if I could ever get to the point where I knew I had weekends free all the time, I might even go to some of these shows. But it was kind of a bummer knowing that they were going on and I couldn't. The only thing that keeps me going is that, in fact, I will be at Fall Comic Con, the one-day wonder, October 5th, 2019, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'll be there the whole day. 33,000 square foot of comic book mayhem. There'll be a lot of guest creators. Go right now, well, after the podcast was over, www.mcbacomiccons.com, because advanced tickets are on sale right now. You know, the guest list is up. The dealer list is up. Everything's ready to go. So when you get there to the Minnesota State Fair Education Building.
Because you need to get edumacated.
Yeah, damn
you
right.
You call Skippy. It the Edumacation Building. You called it
I
the
wanted
education.
To see if you wanted to get in there because, you know, it's right there on the fairgrounds. It's all ready to rock. So I will be there. I'll probably be up front with my old partner, Pat. Last year, we just sat for about 2-3 hours getting people in the door. And then after that, I have my camera. We'll wander around. If you see me, stop and say hi. If you bring pie, well, you know, I might get it to Corey. I am that type of guy. It's not like Corey ever found a pie with a piece missing out of it. Never happens. Never happens. If you do have something for the charity booth for next spring con and you want a tax write-off for this year, let me know. You know, if you're going to bring a couple items, that's cool. If you're going to bring a ton of stuff, let me know and I'll make sure I have the appropriate car for you. So you can just, you know, some guy wanted to donate eight boxes of comics. That was really cool. I'll get those processed and get them ready for spring con. So, but I will be at Fall Comic Con. Hopefully I'll have some money to play with. Who knows? So that's pretty much me for freaking. Corey, what you freaking on?
Joe, I am watching Star Trek, the animated series. It's up on Amazon.
It was on Amazon. It was on Netflix. I actually have it on DVD somewhere.
Yeah, I have it on DVD too. But I haven't watched it since I was a kid. Ask me why it's in freaking.
Well, because Filmation did the animation.
Oh my God, the animation is the worst I've ever seen.
What do you mean? You don't mind the whole thing where the only thing that moves is Kirk's eye?
Or the fact that they reused the same animation over and over. And there's only like 5 or 6 pieces of music that they use over. You know, the winged aliens coming at them and that horrible screeching sound they make?
Yeah.
In the first 16 episodes, they used that exact footage 3 separate times. The above shot, where it looks like Uhura is laying in her chair, that is used at least 2 an episode. I will say, when they did the rotoscope stuff of the Enterprise, I could tell you where it's from. Because there's the one scene where the camera kind of comes up, but the Enterprise tilts over and it goes up toward the top of the saucer section. It's like, oh wow, they're rotoscoping from the original pilot. And there are some other things that are rotoscoped, but oh my God, it is just, it's god-awful animation. Yeah. And other than the main characters, the voice acting is worse than Resident Evil games.
Well, you know who did 90% of it?
I know that James Doohan did a lot.
He did most of it, except for the women.
That was done by Majel Barrett.
Yeah, she did a lot of the women.
And there was one character that was done by Shatner, because you could tell it was Shatner kind of putting his voice back like this.
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing is some of the stories aren't bad. I mean, there was the first time we seen Robert April, who became canon as the first, I think he was the first captain of the Enterprise that we know.
Yeah,
although I don't
know
if
first captain, and then the next captain was Pike, and then
They did keep that. I didn't know what Discovery if they decided to back that. It didn't even sound like he was out on mission. It just sounds like he was the guy who helped overdo it. There's the one episode with Spock where he goes back in time that was always considered canon. They had a couple episodes which was cool when, for some reason, all the men got incapacitated and the women stepped up to save the day. But no, I agree with you. I am forgiving in a lot of things. And boy, that anything Filmation is kind of the
drizzling shits.
Oh, and you know, I got Return to Planet of the Apes, which as a kid just boggled my brain. I absolutely loved it because I'm a big Planet of the Apes guy. And of course it ends on a cliffhanger and they never came back to it. And again, if you want to get a Joe prize and go back to earlier episodes when I was expounding on the, I had a Planet of the Apes book. Is it in my pile of books? Or did I bring it downstairs? Oh, here it is right here. Planet of the Apes. Tales from the Forbidden Zone, where they actually, it's a bunch of books, and they actually refer to stuff in that time era. And it's just a wonderful book. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Who published it? Titan Books. Well, Titan does some. So, yeah, if you're a Planet of the Apes guy, you want to pick this up. 2017, Planet of the Apes, Tales from the Forbidden Zone. A lot of fun to read. And I'm mildly amazed it was actually where I thought it would be. But, yeah, no, it's Filmation. F is freaking.
I almost wish that they would have just done them as radio plays, because you had one written by David Geralds, one written by Larry Niven, who brings his Kzinti. The Kzinti are now part of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I remember reading that in the, I forget the name of the book. It was after the Borg attack, and they're trying to reform the, keep the Federation going, and then all the foes of the Federation, with the exception of Klingon, formed a party, an alliance to go against them. And I forget what the name of the book series was. But that
Typhon Pact.
Yes. And that species plays a big part in it.
The other thing is, a lot of these episodes, I don't know if I saw or not. Because when I was a kid, anything scary, I couldn't take it. But I remember Alan Dean Foster did adaptations just like he did the original episodes. And the original episodes were just Star Trek 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And each episode was kind of condensed down to a short story. And then the animated were Star Trek logs. And there were 9 of them, so they did one of each episode. But he also expanded on them so that there were only 3 episodes per book. And he added tons of detail. So there were, like, the one with the Spock's childhood. I'm watching it going, wait a minute, I remember there being a lot more in this. And I grabbed one of my reference books, and it's like, when Alan Dean Foster did the adaptation of the animated series, the original books had sold so well, they told him to expand it so they could, so they could put out more books. But, on the good episodes, it's really frustrating. It's so frustrating because it's like, this could be good if it wasn't just so damn ugly. Or the voice acting wasn't so just bargain basement terrible. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, I mentioned earlier about using social media to push your shop. Heroic Games over at Minnehaha in Minneapolis. They moved to a larger location. It's pretty easy to get from the old store. Just get to the old store and move 3 feet over to the open door. That's the new store. So, Paul Zaniski, I'll ask him how he pronounces it. He knows how to say it, but Paul's the owner, and he uses not only his personal Facebook page, but one under Heroic Goods and Games to promote the bejesus out of his store. Not only stuff that he's doing, but he also gets on things like there's one called Minnesota Toy Posse, who that basically just guys who get together and they talk a lot about the toys that they pick up or things that they're looking for. Hey, you know, these guys are swapping out this. Plus, and I'm going to this, or it's going to be a freaking Sunday, September 15th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Bloomington Knights of Columbus. They're doing a back-to-school swap for the Minnesota Toy Posse. 1114 American Boulevard in Bloomington. I love going to these because you see tons of dealers. I see tons of friends that were there. That's how I found out about Heroic Games and about how I found out the one comic shop over Maplewood because Epic Comics, because they were there promoting their stuff. And so they're not only online promoting their stuff, but I don't know, it's just a fun time to go. Yeah, there are guys with comics, there's guys with toys. And although I'm sitting here, you know, doing the second best thing, you know, talking with Corey about comics and stuff, I'd rather be at the con having some fun. So, you know, they're around, they're expanding. It's good news because, you know, some places are not. And of course, there is an eclair. Now I'm hungry for. I know it's cream filled and everything. Eclairs. But I was going to mention. Let's see if I can find it here. Over at in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, they've got a Comic Con on the 14th as well. That's on Saturday. So if you get a chance to head over there, go to their con on Saturday. Then go to the Toy Posse. And so I might be busy this upcoming weekend, Corey. I'm going to have time to pod. Heck, you know, there's even a fall hobby show and sale going on at the Minnesota Fairgrounds with the Twin Cities Model Railroad Museum. And I love model railroading. I don't have one. It's one of those things I always wish I did. But I love going to that, too. So I got to get back on eBay. I need some money. I wonder if I could sell some body parts. Oh, well, let's see. What else is going on? Oh, I actually read some comics, if you can believe that. I'm not going to bore you, but the two of them I read, number ones, I read, it's a four-issue series from Marvel called Death's Head. And this is the classic Death's Head from the 70s, where he talks in weird, take yourself out. Yes, you know, he talks in just a weird format, almost like a reverse Yoda. And something's happened to him because when we see him, he's basically the percussion set of a band. And when he wakes up, he's not too happy about it. So I enjoyed the first issue. It leads on a cliffhanger. Imagine issue two is out. We talked this up in previews, and of course, now I got to read it. History of Marvel Universe number one. Mark Waid wrote it, so it's already on my buy list. This is just one of those books that come out occasionally where they line up everything and talk to you about Marvel Comics. And more importantly, and what they did, which I absolutely love, at the very end. So you get, first off, you get a story where they're pretty much talking about, okay, this is the history of what's going on. And I believe it's Silver, who's somebody talking to Galactus? Is it Silver Surfer?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's Franklin Richards.
Oh, okay. That's even better. But then they give the, how do you say it, annotations, where, yes, okay, this is where the stories appeared. And it's just fun to see. Okay, well, let's see. Silver Surfer 10. I read that. Ultimates 2, number 6. Nope, never read that. Well, let's go back to 1990 in Quasar. Yep, I remember reading that. How about Thor 169 and 69? No, I didn't read that, but I can get to it because I have it in my essentials. No, they go back and they basically put down where all these books occurred. So just a lot of fun in the series. I think this one, I'm going to enjoy the series, but I know I will probably buy in a book form when it finally is published. Or maybe I missed it already. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Kickstarters are being delivered. I got three the last couple of weeks. One of them I talked about from Stickney Hughes and Crabe. Sounds like a law firm. White Ash Volume 1. And I talked about this small town in Western Pennsylvania. Coal mining is a generational calling, and something's going on. And Alec has to discover the secrets that are going on about his family, about the town of White Ash. Big, it says volume one hardcover. I got Carnal Confessions. And this is from Sora Soong. Am I saying her name right? And Kate Colors. Again, this is an artist who I believe I met. I haven't met in person, and I'm dying to get a commission from her through Facebook. And I believe it was someone you knew, Corey. So
yes, I said, hey, you'll like this person's art.
Yep. And she had a Kickstarter, and I jumped on board, and I went to whatever level. I picked the cover I wanted. And, you know, I really want to go nuts. I really would love to just buy. I'm going to the top. I want to be in the book. I want a piece of original art, whatever. And what I love is you get all these cool freebies, which I haven't even talked about because they're sitting in the boxes and back. And, of course, the last one, and I'm dying to read into this, I got the first volume of Dreadstar. Jim Starlin. You talk about a big name guy who you think, oh, Jim Starlin, he's got it made. He doesn't need to use Kickstarter. Well, he did to do his own omnibus. And I went to to the Top, got all three volumes. And, you know, speaking of Kickstarters, they just had one for Coffin Comics finish. And if you pardon me while I refire up the old Cray 4000, this is four. Well, first of all, they do Lady Death. So it's for Brian Peluto's Lady Death Blasphemy Anthem number one. And they were wildly, wildly successful. And they put on so many, what do they call them? Level, when you get to the next level, they have like either more art or they'll send you a pin or a card or maybe an extra comic, things like that. They went ballistic on this one. So just for $26, I get the volume that I wanted. I'm going to get a ton of cool add-on stuff, which I'm really looking forward to when they deliver it. So, yeah, I love going on the Kickstarter, and you know, not only for people that I've met, people that I know, but even some names. You'd think Lady Death has its own audience, but again, they're not just counting on previews; they're reaching out to do it. So it's a good way. If you've got something, you can always pimp. And you know, Corey and I have talked about Kickstarter that we like when people come on the show or want to talk about it. TV-wise, my wife and I finished The Boys. Corey, have you watched The Boys?
I've watched the first three episodes.
We would watch one and wait because they're pretty intense. But the last, we blew through the last three last night. Because, and there's only eight, and it's season one, and it ends on a WTF. Nowhere anything like the book. So if you've read the book and you're thinking, I don't want it, no, go ahead and do it. You'll love it. It's fun. I don't know what we're going to binge next. And by binge, I mean probably one at a time. We are doing Lucifer on Netflix because I just love the actor. He's so swarmy as Lucifer. I hope it would be fun to see him play Lucifer when they finally get Netflix going. It would be just kind of a neat tie-in. So yeah, a lot of geeking going on. Whole lot of geeking going on. Corey, how about you? What you geeking on?
Well, first, I've had time to watch stuff on the streaming services, Joe.
Oh, you must have quit one of your podcasts. I'm sorry.
No, I had it was a holiday weekend last weekend, and I didn't have a single day where I just got to hang out and be at home because I either worked or went to a comic shop and spent $220. But I had Monday and Tuesday nights, no, Tuesday and Wednesday nights off, and I was too exhausted to, like, oh, I'll watch a movie. Nah, I'm too tired. I just kind of watched stuff that was pretty. Slow TV is no longer on Netflix, but it does have its own channel on Pluto TV. And then there's a channel on my Roku for 4K Spotlight. And it spotlights different 4K videos. And there was one that I found. It's like 8 or 9 hours long. And it's a guy driving around, what is it, a national park out in Utah during the fall. So you see the mountains and the hillsides and all the trees are different colors. And he's just driving. And it's, I hate to say this, maybe I am getting old, but I just put that on and just watched it. It's like going for a long drive where you don't have to worry about gas. It's so pretty. Comic wise, I read some really cool comics. I read the first issue of Neil Adams' Batman versus Ra's al Ghul. Story doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense, but it's Neil Adams art, and that's enough for me. And there were some pages where it's like, I'm not even going to bother figuring out what he's doing here. I just want to look at the art. I read Superman Year One, numbers 1 and 2, which is written by Frank Miller and drawn by John Romita Jr., and they have worked together before. They worked together on the Daredevil Man Without Fear miniseries. Now, there are some things that continuity nuts are a little mad about, but I'd like to remind them. One, this is in DC Black. Two, he said this is in the Dark Knight universe. So this is not exactly the Superman you know. It's the Superman who fought Batman in Dark Knight 2 and in Dark Knight 1. And what if you keep that in mind as you read it, it really makes a lot of sense. It is a different version of Superman, one who wasn't as humble and one who thought more about country than the world. And when you read it that way, it's really fascinating. John Romita Jr.'s art is something that is almost polarizing. There are some people like me who really love it, who love the power and the immensity of it. And there are other people who don't like it. While I understand the people who don't like it, I don't agree with them. This is a really good miniseries, and I'll probably go into a lot more detail when the third issue drops out. Another comic we talked about a while back, Lenore is back. Lenore is a humor comic about a dead girl. She's a zombie, but, you know, not a zombie, but more of a she's dead and thinks it's really cute. This comic has been around in various forms for a long time.
And you remember back when I had Hot Comics, because we had women who would come in just to buy that and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. And I remember there was one woman who was goth, and she would come in and we'd talk with her. And one time she came in without makeup on.
And we didn't recognize her.
Well, I think we recognized her. We just gave her a little grief, but it was.
Well, I remember it took us a while. She had to tell us who she was, and then we're like, "Oh yeah,
boy, are we stupid!"
But the thing, I could never read Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, and I'm not saying, "Oh, I don't like the story or don't like." No, I couldn't read it. The lettering was so goddamn terrible.
Small.
I couldn't read it.
That needs to be in a big paperback.
But Lenore was kind of this weird, quirky, dark humor, and I'm glad it's back. The art keeps improving every time he comes back. It's been 4 years between issues, and it ended on a cliffhanger. And they move forward from that, making fun of the fact that it was 4 years ago on a cliffhanger. But Roman Dirge, who probably gets a lot of money working in animation, really, really fun stuff if you like that style of humor. And then the last comic that I'm going to be putting on the geeking rack is Pure Nostalgia. That's all it is. Spider-Man Going Big. Spider-Man Going Big is three stories by different creators. The first one is a Gary Conway story. And it reads like a social issue comic that Gary used to do in the 70s. I don't know the story behind how this came about, because it really reads like a story he would have done in the 70s or 80s. Drawn in a very 80s style. And I'm not saying a 90s style, because 90 was all scratchy and kinetic, and this is more in an 80s style where it's very much, it almost reads like a Sal Buscema story. And it really, one of the things that I talk about is you can't wallow in nostalgia. If all you're selling is nostalgia, you're not going to last long. Because remember when Hulk Hogan came back to the WWE, his first time around the loop, he was a huge star, and they actually would have an issue with the live shows because he would get an ovation that would last 5 or 6 minutes. And believe it or not, that's why they put him on SmackDown, because SmackDown was pre-taped. They could edit out so that it's not 5 minutes of TV time of people cheering. And then the second time he came around, ticket sales were softer and he didn't get as much of a blow. By the third time he came around, it was nobody cared. Because nostalgia has a limited lifespan. This is how nostalgia should be worked. We got a story by Gary Conway, and then we got a backup story drawn by Mark Bagley. And then we got a backup story drawn by Eric Larson. And it's just a special one shot to say, hey, these guys used to work on Spider-Man. Aren't they cool? It's not, we're going to put Gary Conway on the main Spider-Man book and have him do, you know, 3 years. Because as much as I like Gary Conway, his storytelling isn't modern. And people under our age would read it and go, wow, this is moving wrong. Because he tells stories in a different way than modern creators do. That doesn't mean it's worse. It doesn't mean it's better. It's just different. It's like when you watch a movie from the 70s, they're very different than a movie now, because in the 70s, the filmmakers would actually take more time. Shots would last longer. It would take a while to set up the characters before things started going. Now an audience expects the story to start, boom, within the first 2-3 minutes. They don't expect long character-based sequences. You don't really get to learn about the characters through anything other than, oh, he does this, and he does this, and he does this, and he does this. And maybe he's got some smart remarks. But I really enjoyed it for a nostalgia pop. And Marvel's been doing good with the nostalgia pops. We've got a New Mutants story by Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz. And as much as I would, you know, be lined up at the shop for them to do a New Mutants series, every time Chris Claremont comes on and does an X-Men book, I love it because it's Chris Claremont doing the X-Men. And he's wiser about not having the storylines that last for, you know, 10 years. But his storytelling style is very verbose, and a lot of readers just pick it up, flip through it, and go, wow, that's a lot of text, and close it and put it back on the shelf, and it doesn't sell well. So I like how Marvel's doing their nostalgia pops, rather than here's a new series with these older creators who haven't done comics in a while. It's more, hey, here's a reunion. It's kind of like you went to a high school reunion yesterday, right, Joe?
Yes.
Would you want to hang out with those people every weekend?
Funny thing is, I didn't really see many of my class there. Mainly probably because we had our 35th last year.
Okay.
But and of course, the guys I really want to see, they never go to them anyways.
Yeah. But you go to a high school reunion and, hey, it's great to hang out and everything. And you always promise you'll keep in better touch. And you really don't, because you've moved on from that part of your life. It may be sad, but that's just the way things work. And it's the same with comic creators. There are some comic creators who are doing vital work even now. Peter David's a good example. But the other thing is, Spider-Man 2099 didn't really sell all that well. I loved it. You loved it. And all the people who go, we need the older creators to do comics the way they used to. Where were they? They didn't show up. Nothing bad about it. It's just styles change. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to me mostly blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Oh, these podcasts are getting tougher to do every week. Oh, better caffeinate up next time.
You're not even awake.
I just mail you a quarter and sit back and watch you go.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
A cow walked up to a kangaroo one day. At least I think it was during the day. It might have been in the evening. But for the story's sake, let's just say it was during the day. Anyways, the cow walked up to the kangaroo and said, what have you got in your pouch? The kangaroo was really shocked by the cow's question and gave a funny reply. I wish I could remember what the kangaroo said, because it was really hysterical. I mean, when I first heard the joke, I laughed till I dropped my teeth. Go ahead, Corey. Hit my music.
I don't get it.
Call my mama. Somebody 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 call my mama. on, bitches!